Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Network Sunday, August 19th, 2018. This is episode 1516. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's time to talk tech. I'm the tech guy. Yeah. What else would I talk about? Not gardening. No, it's a tech show. Sorry. I think the gardening show's to the left a little bit. This is a show where we talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all the gee-jaws and doodads that are changing the world around us. See, why wouldn't you want to talk about tech? It's, after all, the kind of the hot topic of the hour, isn't it? 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. You don't have to just ask me. You could tell me. You could yell me. But you still have to call 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call. Sure, you can. All you have to do is use Skype out or some sort of VoIP that calls phones. And since this is a toll-free number, it shouldn't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. The website where we put all the stuff I talk about is techguylabs.com. Easy to remember. And there's no charts. There's no sign-up. techguylabs.com. You ready for the Chinese internet? Article in Foreign Affairs this week, When China Rules the Web. So I thought this was kind of interesting because we often think of the internet as, well, an American invention. And while we don't own it, I think we just assume, well, we dominate it. Not the case. In fact, there's more people online in China than there are in the rest of the world. China has billions of internet users. And while China doesn't have the same kind of vision for what they want the internet to be, they definitely are very interested. President Xi made internet a big part of his vision for China in a couple of years ago, after very little was done in China to promote the internet. He established the Central Leading Group on Internet Security and Information and Drive Policy. He created a new agency, the Cyberspace Administration of China. I think that's probably a poor translation. I doubt the Chinese word is cyberspace. I hope it's not. President Xi, we don't call it that anymore. Yeah. And he took responsibility for controlling online content, bolstering cybersecurity, and developing a digital economy. And at this point, it's been a huge success, but his vision of what the internet is very much at odds with what we, I think, in the United States think of the internet. We think of it as kind of a global, open system communicating between countries and people kind of freely. At least that's the theory anyway. In President Xi's vision, cyber sovereignty is the right of individual countries to independently choose their own path of cyber development. We need it. There's got to be a better word than cyber. I wonder what the Chinese word for cyber is. And internet public policies participate in international cyberspace government on governance on an equal footing. And he also says that every nation should be able to have its particular local internet as it wants it. And of course, we know very well that the Chinese government uses the internet to control information flow. They block virtual private networks. They block Facebook and Twitter. They use censorship to keep, for instance, images that they don't like off the internet. But what's interesting is the internet is fundamentally global, isn't it? And it's very difficult to control what flows in and out over these fiber lines and these copper cables that connect the countries of the world. And it's very challenging for China. They built something we call the Great Firewall of China to protect the Chinese citizenry against information from the rest of the world. But China's investing heavily, not just in the internet, but artificial intelligence, quantum computing, semiconductor research. Eric Schmidt, the former chairman of Google, said, by 2020, the Chinese will have caught up in artificial intelligence. By 2025, they will be better than us. And by 2030, 12 years from now, they will dominate the industries of artificial intelligence. Already, the Chinese use AI for face recognition quite widely throughout the country, even for jaywalkers. Yeah, there's a place in Shenzhen, there's apparently a big jaywalking problem on some of these big streets. So they have cameras everywhere. And when they catch you jaywalking, there's a big electronic billboard. They put up your picture, not only your picture, but your name, your address, information about where you work. They publicly shame you for jaywalking. And they say they want to use this for many other things. In fact, they have now a social score system in China. Imagine this, based on, you know, how you behave, whether you jaywalk, they'll be able to prevent you from getting a home loan, riding the bus, buying train tickets. They can kind of shut you down. Now you might say, well, that's China, you know, it's another country. But there's a big furor right now because a lot of American companies see China as a fertile area for economic growth. Apple really loves selling iPhones into China and hopes that that will be the engine for growth because, frankly, Apple's run out of people to sell iPhones to in the United States. Everybody who wants one has one. Even Google now, and very controversially, Google pulled out of China a few years ago. Sergey Brin, one of the founders of Google, who was raised in the Soviet Union and has no love for authoritarian governments, decided rather than help China persecute dissidents that Google would just get out and took Google and its business out of China. But now Google's apparently working on a new search engine for China that is censored according to Chinese law. And Google employees are very upset about it. They had an all-hands meeting this week. Sergey Brin, one of the founders, was there. He said, I just found out about this, which seems hard to believe, since he and Larry Page they own it. They own the company. But he said, I just found out about it. Somebody was live tweeting it out to a reporter, and they shut it down. They said, we're going to stop this meeting because it's going public. It'll be an interesting thing to see what happens as American capitalism meets Chinese authoritarianism. And I think in the long run, it might have a lot to do with the evolution of the internet. Seems to me we want to, and I would say I'm all for it, keep the internet free and open here in the United States and encourage U.S. companies when dealing with authoritarian governments all over the world, and there are many, not to kowtow to them, to use an old Chinese phrase, not to give in to them, but to stand up for the freedom and the openness that we celebrate here in the United States. I think I'd like to see Apple stand up to China a little bit more. Google. Facebook doesn't have to because they aren't in China. Although, we also saw rumors this month that Facebook's working on a special version just for China. Oh, boy. 8888 Ask Leo. We can talk about that. Anything that's on your mind, how to use your computer better, how to buy it. We're getting ready for a big iPhone event coming up in less than a month, I would guess. Sometime early September, Apple will announce its new iPhones. We could talk about those rumors and a lot more. 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kim Schaffer's here. She's answering the calls as fast as she can. She's got like four arms going, bing, bing, bing. We're going to get you on the air right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hate to interrupt Paul McCartney. That's just not cool, man. but I kind of have to. Otherwise, we have to pay him even more money. That's Kim. Actually, I think I can. We could play the whole song, right? Can we, Michael?
You're already paying the BMI.
Yeah, I paid the fee. I paid the fee. McCartney's getting the money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for
Let's just keep going. No.
Just play the whole album.
My DJ days are gone. Yeah. At some point they'll get to When I'm 64, which I remember as a young man thinking I'll never be that old.
It seems so far in the distance.
Hello, Kim Schaffer.
Hello.
Welcome.
Good morning.
How has your day been so far?
Not bad. I got my coffee in hand.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go get some coffee while you answer the phones.
Okay.
No, I think I should probably put the... So you've got some people lined up, have you?
Yes.
All right.
How about Tina and Manitowoc? Manitowoc, Wisconsin. I had to Google that.
Manitowoc, right, Tina?
Yes. Hi there, Leo.
Hi, Tina. Thank you, Kim. Welcome. Manitowoc. It's probably Indian,
yes.
Right? Sounds Indian.
Yes, it is.
Nice. What can I do for you?
I started out with Windows 95. Huh. And then when Steve Jobs had his last event, I went and started with the Apple 4S that was, and just went everything Apple and Apple computers and everything. And now after 31 years, I'm going back to school, and they want us to have a Windows computer. So I've been away from Windows.
Oh, man. Well,
wondering what kind of computer that was good and reliable that I should get. Want us to have Microsoft Office and wanted us to have it on them.
Yeah, well, that's a reasonable thing. What are you studying, Tina?
Medical.
Okay, so probably there's software that you use in the business, that you need to have that runs on Windows. I am, in general... While I use Windows all the time and Macintosh too, I'm kind of on the record as saying, general purpose operating systems like Windows and Macs are probably overkill for most people, unless you need them for some, good reason, as you do. You know, I tell people get an iPad. You like your iPhone, get an iPad or get a Google Chromebook. You'll be more secure. It'll do everything you want more reliably for less. But there comes a time when you need, especially for work, you need to run Windows. Here's the good news. Windows 10, the current version, is so much better than Windows 95. You'll feel comfortable because it looks a lot like Windows 95, but it's much more reliable. You don't get anywhere near the problems that we used to have. It's also more secure than it used to be. So what's your budget for a Windows laptop? I presume you want a laptop, right?
Yes, I do want a laptop. I say about around $1,000 to $1,200.
Oh, you're in good shape here. You know, when it comes to business laptops, there's a few companies I really like. And they're actually the big names in Windows. There's Dell, there's Hewlett-Packard, which used to be not so great, but now that they separated the PC business out, they've gotten quite good. And my personal favorite, Lenovo. And not just any Lenovos, because they make cheap Lenovos, but the Lenovo ThinkPads. And I think for you... A ThinkPad might be a very good choice. These are really built to last. They're good machines, high quality screens, great keyboards. They're probably the best keyboards out there. I think they're very good choices. I would look. Do you know what size you want? You want a big screen?
I'm teetering between a 13 or a 15.
Yeah, me too.
Do I need a 16 RAM for memory or 8?
Yeah, I would for you, for what you're probably going to want to do, 16 gigabytes of RAM. 13 is more portable, but it can be really small depending on what kinds of software you're using. If you don't mind carrying a 15, you might want to look at a 15.
Okay.
With Windows nowadays, touch is actually a big part of Windows 10. So while you don't have to choose a touch screen, it might not be a bad idea to at least look at touch screens.
Okay.
The Lenovo ThinkPads, and again, only the ThinkPads. Don't get the cheap Lenovos. The ThinkPads are based on the old IBM design, and they've really stayed fairly true to that. Would be an excellent choice for you. Dell XPS 13 or 15, also an excellent choice. Very nice screens, good keyboards. Dell has very good support. Lenovo less good in support unless you pay for it. Actually, really, it's true of both nowadays. That what happens is we put such pressure on them to lower prices on computers that one of the ways they took more profit is by reducing the quality of tech support. So unless you pay for it, you're not going to get great tech support. The other thing that's interesting nowadays is you're used to laptops that just, you know, are laptops. They have a keyboard. But now there's other kinds of laptops. There's two-in-ones. There's convertibles. The two-in-ones will flip around to turn into a tablet. The keyboard stays attached, but they'll flip around. You can also use them as a tent. There's also convertibles, which the keyboards detach. Microsoft makes some very nice ones as well. In fact, I think another thing for you to look at, if you don't mind, if you want something that has a tablet with a detachable keyboard, I don't think that's as robust, but if you don't mind that, the Surface Pros right now are very well priced. In fact, they just did a big deal on Surface Laptop as well. So Microsoft, maybe I should throw Microsoft in that mix as well. HP, mm-hmm. Lenovo, Dell, and Microsoft. And then $1,200, $1,000.
Hard drive space.
I think, first of all, you're going to get an SSD. Don't even consider getting the old-fashioned spinning drives. You'll see so much performance improvement with what we call a solid-state drive. Use flash memory. For most, you know, Windows itself will operate in 64 gigabytes. So it really depends on how much data extra you want. I would say for most people, 512 gigabytes is more than enough. And in your price point, that's probably, you know, you're going to be choosing between 256 and 512. Either one of those would be all right. But I would say if you can afford it, if you can get it, 512 gigs storage, 16 gigs RAM, a touch screen if you can. What else do you need? Let me think if there are any other specs. It doesn't really matter what processor. I'd say get the i5 processor. And if you can, get the 8th generation i5. That's the latest. 8th gen i5.
And then they have a dedicated graphic card.
You won't need that. I don't think you'll need that unless you're doing medical imaging or something like that.
Okay, so it doesn't matter if you don't have like a...
They call it discrete GPU. The Intel graphics are more than enough for you.
Okay, great.
That'll save you some money. So an i5 with Intel's Iris graphics, 16 gigs of RAM. I like more RAM just because everything runs a little faster. For sure, a solid-state drive. And I guess you're probably going to want Office 365. The good news is you can subscribe to that now for about $10 a month. So, you spread it out that way.
Wonderful.
Hey,
all sounds good.
Don't forget to have a good backup solution. Maybe when you're buying the computer, an external hard drive you can back up onto. That's really important. And good luck in school. That's exciting.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Leo.
Thank you, Tina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Time to talk high tech. I was just looking at Microsoft really, I wonder if they've got a new Surface Book coming out. Microsoft is really pushing out the Surface Books at some very good prices. Actually, not the Surface Book. I'm sorry. The Surface Book do not get. That's the one where you detach the top so it can be a tablet. That's a convertible. I meant the Surface Laptop. The one that has the oddly... luxurious Alcantara keyboard, the Surface Laptop. And they, I guess, I wonder if maybe they're going to have a new Surface Laptop coming out or what, but I've seen the prices drop by something like 50%. So you could get, if you were looking, if you're shopping for a Windows PC, you could get a nice, I got the Burgundy Alcantara. It's very attractive. You get it with an i5. Let's get 16. I'm just going to price this out. Oh, they don't have you have to get the i7 to get 16 gigs. Well, that's how they get you, huh? Still pretty, that's a little pricey. Never mind. Forget I mentioned it. Once I configured it properly, it ended up being $1,900. That's too much. There are much better deals out there. 8888 Ask Leo. I love spending your money. I love saving your money. Let's go to Wichita Falls, Texas. David on the line. Hi, David.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's Sunday. I'm good.
Nice, relaxing Sunday, I hope, in Wichita Falls. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not as hot as normally this time of year.
Yeah, I bet. Whereabouts is Wichita Falls?
I'm a couple hours north of Dallas.
Okay. All right. I get the picture. What can I do for you?
Well, in April, Windows 10 gave me an update, and when it did, several of my programs didn't work. So I went to the previous version. Everything worked.
Oh, dear.
Then I got an update. Then I got an update or two, and they worked fine.
Oh.
And I got this April 2018 update again.
It stopped working. What programs are stopping working?
Well, I've talked to you about this before, because they're old. Total Recorder.
Oh, the old stuff. DVD, yeah.
DVD Shrink.
Yeah.
Stuff I learned on the screensavers back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just wondering if there's a way I can keep just that one update.
You don't want to do that. I know you'd like to because you'd like to keep using those old programs.
Huh?
But you really want to keep those updates going. It's too important for your security that you keep the updates.
Well, like I said, I've gotten other updates and went through, and then didn't cause me any problems. Just that one particular update from April.
Oh, is that must be the 1803 update?
I believe so. I had three boxes. Window and three boxes and stuff.
Yeah, that's a big update. They called that the, I don't know what they called it, the Spring Creators Update. Microsoft's naming conventions are odd. They will eventually make you do 1803, I think. I don't think you can avoid that.
I'll have to keep doing what I'm doing, I guess.
Yeah, 1803, and by the way, 1809 is coming in a month or two. These are the two big... I think Microsoft's going to kind of keep it on this schedule. They never said exactly how often they would do feature updates, but these are feature updates. And actually, they're not as important for security. In fact, they're really not important for security at all. So I kind of, as long as it's the 1803 update we're talking about, I don't know how important it is because you're still going to get security patches even if you don't do the 1803.
Yeah, I've gotten other updates that work just fine. No problems at all.
Yeah. Yeah, the feature updates, which, again, are about twice a year. Another one's coming in about a month. Add new features, but aren't really there for making things secure. And the 1803, the one we're talking about, is notoriously bad. Lots of people had problems with 1803. Now, unfortunately, you can only defer it. You can't prevent it forever. This is the so you can continue to defer it, but eventually Microsoft's going to force you to do it. Depends on how long will depend on which version of Windows you are and which branch. Or if you're on the semi-annual channel targeted branch, you can defer it for a year. If you are a normal user, tell me how you got Windows 10. Did you get it from as a computer new, or did you upgrade from an older version of Windows?
Well, I bought a new computer a while back, and so it already had Windows 10 on it.
Okay, it came with it. So if you go to Windows Update, you can figure out what kind of deferment you can do. You go to Windows Update in your control panel, and you go to the Advanced Options.
Okay.
You can choose the branch readiness level to determine when feature updates are installed. Semi-annual channel targeted means the update is ready for most people. Semi-annual channel means it's ready for widespread use in organizations. This all depends on you, I think, having a business version of Windows, though. If you have the home version, you're just going to get it. There's none you can.
Yeah, I'm retired. I don't work anymore.
Yeah. So, well, it's also you can buy Windows. Pro, Windows 10 Pro, and I think you can still defer it. But if you could also use Group Policy Edit if you wanted to do that. I'll tell you what. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article. If you're using Windows 10 Home, the one thing you can do that is kind of a workaround is you can set your Wi-Fi connection to metered. Do you know what that I'm talking about here?
Yeah.
So if you go to the network and internet settings and you click on Wi-Fi, there's a switch that says you have a metered Wi-Fi. And metered means you pay by the bit. And so since it's such a big download, if you turn on metered, you may have to do that with your Ethernet as well if you have a wired connection, then Windows won't update. However, it blocks even the security updates.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure by hand you go in and get those security updates. That's the thing. I would look and see if you get newer versions of the software that will work with Windows 10. That's probably...
Well, like Total Recorder, I got a new version of that about a year ago.
Still doesn't work.
Right.
Oh, man. Huh. Total, they're up to version 8.6. Says Windows 10 compatible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would inquire with the publishers. Look, 1803 broke you.
All right.
What are you going to do about it? Because everybody is getting 1803. In fact, we're going to get 1809. Now, this is another side of it. You might turn on a metered connection, and in a month, 1809. So the way Microsoft labels these, 18 is the year, right? And the month follows. So 1803 was for March 2018, but came out in late April, early May. 1809 theoretically would be September. It really feels like they're done. They've been updating it quite a bit lately, and it feels like it's in the Windows Insider, pre-release channel. So it feels like it's pretty much done. However, because of the label, it probably won't be out next month. It'll probably be out early October. So if you could hold out to early October, then try 1809, maybe this would fix it all. 1803 was just kind of awful. It's kind of awful. But Total Recorder's got to fix it because everybody's going to have this problem, right?
Right, yeah. It's a DVD shrink, same thing.
Same thing. Interesting. I wonder what they're doing. Both of those are media tools. I wonder wonder what they're doing that is incompatible. That's interesting.
I don't use the shrink too often, but the Total Recorder, I love that because I can record off the internet.
It's good for radio and stuff. DVD shrink is, it's a free program, so maybe they're just not paying too much attention to it. It's conceivable, right? People get tired of supporting and give up on Windows. I would say defer it if you can, but make sure you get those security updates. And if you can defer it, try 1809 when it comes out in a couple of months. And maybe Microsoft will have learned their lesson. It seems to be, so far, pretty stable. I'm talking to the people who are using it now on the Insider Channel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I wouldn't expect DVD shrink to be updated. But Total Recorder is a commercial program currently up to date. They claim Windows 10 compatibility. That ought to be up to date. That ought to be up to date. Hey, I got to do an ad for our podcast advertiser, and I love doing the ads for Rocket Mortgage because they really, I'm a believer in companies that care about the customer first. And the great thing about Rocket Mortgage, this is a competitive industry. There's an example. I mean, there is real competition for your money if you're going to borrow to buy a home. There are lots of places you can go. But can I make a recommendation? Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, number one in customer satisfaction 8 years in a row. They're the best, according to J.D. Power. They're also the largest now, and I think that's because of that, right? There's a relationship. They really focus on customer service. One of the things they noticed that's changed in the home loan industry in the last months, interest rates are going up. They were very stable for years. They're starting to ratchet up. That's not a good thing for consumers. Well, of course, it means it costs more to get a home loan, but it also means there's anxiety, there's pressure as you're looking for a home to buy it fast because you want to buy it because if the interest rates go up, that's going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars more over the 30-year life of the loan. So you kind of say, well, let's buy this house. Let's buy this house. What if the interest rates go up? Let's buy the... You don't want to do that. You're going to be living here. This is the most expensive thing, the most important thing you're ever going to buy. So let's do it right. Let's go to Rocket Mortgage. It's rocketmortgage.com/techguy and use what they call the power buying process. This is an anxiety eliminator. First of all, no more going to the bank, no more dressing up and going in and filling out a long form and then going home and going to the attic and getting paperwork or calling the bank and saying, I need my statements from 2010 and none of that. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, answer a few simple questions within a few minutes. They're going to give you qualified approval. Say, yep, you're good for it. They check your income, assets, and credit, so you don't have to do anything. They have relationships with all the financial institutions. As soon as you say, yeah, it's okay, they'll do that. Then within 24 hours, they'll give you verified approval. That's the next step. Then once you get that, it's like you're a cash buyer. When you're going to make an offer on a house and you've got that letter that says, they got the loan, the verified approval letter, you're good. You're golden. That really is important. Puts you right at the front of the line. But that also turns on something else that's all new. It's exclusive. It's called Rate Shield Approval. They lock in your rate. It cannot go up for up to 90 days. You have 3 months to shop. It can go down. If the rates go down, your rate would go down, but it will not go up. Rocket Mortgage guarantees that rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's exactly what you'd expect from a customer-focused lender. I know it's a competitive business. Lots of people want to lend you money. Can I make a recommendation? At least do yourself a favor. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You can do it online. You can do it on your phone even. And get that rate. And just see if that, you know, shop. It's the easiest way to shop. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. I got a little legalese to give you. Rate Shield Approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. This one's important. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Here's what you need to remember. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You owe it to yourself. Go there. Check it out. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And then have fun buying that new home. It is fun. You're going to be living there for a while. Make sure you get the right one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Lots of... You know, Sunday's a different kind of day, isn't it? I'm just thinking the... I do two shows normally. I do one on Saturdays. A little more energetic, a little more high-paced. Sundays, kind of, I'm laid back. We're just kind of laid back. We're sitting around the Crackle Barrel just talking about technology. A little more relaxed. Annie's in Los Angeles. Hi, Annie.
Oh, hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? You got an interesting conundrum.
Yes, I do, but hold on 1 second. I got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a little staticky. Yeah, yeah. We'll see if this holds up.
Are you there?
Yeah, that worked, whatever you did.
Yeah, it's so weird.
What did you do? You just used a little percussive maintenance? You slapped the phone?
No, if I switch on flash to another line and switch back,
oh,
somehow it seems to get rid of it.
It's a cordless.
Why.
It's a cordless?
Nope.
Nope. That's
this
weird.
This is a landline.
Who knew?
Much better here.
See, you figured that's what we call a workaround. Requires no understanding of why it's happening, but it works.
Most of the time it does.
It's amazing.
Yeah, thank God it worked with you.
Good. So what can I do for you?
Okay. I have been trying to get off for years now, obviously, on my the smartphone I have now, still have, but it's going. Bits and pieces of it are stopping. It's a Palm OS 755P.
Wait a minute. Palm OS 755P. Yes. That's a phone? Oh, you have a Trio.
Yeah, it's a Palm Trio.
That was the last Trio from 2007.
Yep, and what year did they change to Android?
Oh, yeah, they did Web OS, which wasn't Android. They did their own thing, and then they went silently quiet without a whimper. They just disappeared into the... And actually, this is a weird thing, but my LG TV, my very fancy LG OLED TV, runs Web OS. It's LG bought Web OS, and that's what's happened. It ends up on a TV. Your Trio, though, is kind of a classic. You've got a physical keyboard, and it still operates for you pretty well.
Sorry?
You're using it as your phone?
Well, I can still... This is what's left. Over time, Sprint, who I have issues with, took away access to anything web-based. And email, I was always doing straight from the web because I just had too many issues with it on the phone.
Yeah.
So bottom line is all I can use, and now I'm having issues with if I try to text out, the phone will bring me a message asking if I want a hard reset. So now I won't text out.
I think it's
afraid it's going to accidentally hard reset.
Time for a new phone, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
But the issue is getting my contacts off because I'm in the real estate industry.
Oh, you don't want to lose that. Yeah.
Can't lose them, and I can't lose the notes I have in them.
No, of course not.
And for years,
Do you use the Palm Sync with that when you connect it to your desktop and it syncs up? Do you use that?
Well, there's more to the story. Yeah, that's involved. So the sync I tried to use. Now I can't get the phone. I think something within the phone, within the contact between the cords, because I've tried three different cords, And it none of the phone cannot be read on the computers.
Oh, boy.
We try it on other computers, and we try it on this computer that I have.
Yeah.
And so a tech guy I know wants to do clean a little deeper into the phone because he tried cleaning just the external port.
You mean physically cleaning it, like blowing it out with air and stuff?
Well, I think he's going to use some kind of spray thing.
Okay. So the problem is, it sounds like that when you connect that weird palm connector, it's not making a connection. The computer's going, I don't know what this is. It may not actually be the phone. I mean, this is so old, the computer may not have a driver for it. It may say, I don't know what this is. What is this?
I have the software on the laptop I have.
Yeah.
And it's not seeing it. And then we tried some other tech people tried some of the computers in my office. And they couldn't read it either, but maybe...
This is the only place you have this contact list.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
And it's over.
You've really been living on the edge for about 10 years. Yeah, because if you don't have a backup, and you have this precious vital resource, which is your client list, in this phone that is from 2007, and it no longer can connect to a computer. I don't know if Sprint even still offers it. Sprint used to have wireless syncing. Have you tried that?
Well, I was in touch with before Sprint got bought out by this, I don't know, European or whatever company. It's
SoftBank. Yeah, they're Japanese, yeah.
Horrible, horrible.
Yeah. Mostly anyway, it's just Sprint's going under is the problem. So.
Yeah, they don't want to support anything.
No.
But they were trying to help me, and they couldn't figure it out either.
Okay. So there were two ways that you could sync this old Trio. One was wirelessly, but it required the cooperation of the cell phone company. Do you still have data? Can you still get on the net at all? You said you couldn't, right?
Not on the phone.
Yeah. And you can't make phone calls on it, right?
I can make phone calls.
You can make phone calls on it. That's remarkable.
I can receive text in. I can see my contacts. I can see my. I can see everything that's more based, I guess, on the phone.
You're in an urgent crisis because I don't know how long that phone's going to last, and it may be already dying. Opening it up is almost certainly going to kill it.
What? What?
Don't let him open it up and spray something in there, please.
Oh, it will kill it.
Yeah, it'll kill it. And it has a chance of killing it. It's really on its last legs anyway. It's like open heart surgery on a 110-year-old person.
Yeah.
You might save them, but it might just all crumble into dust. So here's what you need
that's
to
what
do.
I'm afraid of.
You need to go get a high school student and pay her $4.50 an hour. To literally go through the screens and copy them out. And I would do that sooner than later because that phone is not going to last much longer. You've really, there's only a couple of ways to get data out of that phone. One is to sync it wirelessly. That requires Sprint's cooperation. I gather that's a dead option. The other is to connect it to the cable and use the Trio Sync, and it would copy it over. Had you ever used Trio Sync with that thing?
Yeah, I have some probably.
So
on
some of your stuff is on the
years.
Yeah, your stuff will be on the PC from the last time you synced.
Right, which is many years ago. Because I had trouble with this, and then I finally got other cords, thinking maybe it's a cord.
Did not red lights go off and sirens go off, Annie, when you said, oh, I can't sync this anymore, but I'll just keep using this? I'm really relying on this device.
Yeah, I know. But I was still trying to find a way to get it off because it was just so overwhelming to transfer it. And... you know, so I tried different tech people. I tried Sprint, and then I'd try hard, and then I'd get so overwhelmed with it, I'd let it go for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. We're going to give up on the wireless syncing because you can't surf to a website on that phone, right? The browser no longer does anything.
No. I mean, I'd have to. What the tech guy was thinking was that if we could get it to work so we could transfer it over, then he could. There was some system he had that said maybe their system that supported BlackBerry, they thought might support Palm.
Look. I don't know why he's even thinking that. If you can get it off the phone onto anything,
we can get it. That's not the issue. The issue is getting it off the phone. There's no, he doesn't need to spend any time thinking about, well, what are we going to do once we get it off the phone? That's easy. That's a standard data format. The real issue is we can't get it off the phone because your cable is no longer responsive.
Mm-hmm. Or the phone is not.
Well, I'm thinking you tried three cables. It's not the cable, obviously, but maybe that connector. It is a little ancient. Maybe that connector is not working. If you could get, I don't even know if you can get the software anymore, the Trio Sync software, but if you could get it and put it on a different computer and try it on a different computer, that might work. But I don't know how you're going to get that stuff.
Why would that work if it's not working on the computer it's on?
Well, because in order for the computer to see the phone, it needs a driver. Because I don't think it's a standard USB device. So it needs a driver to see it. And with the installation of the software, you theoretically get the installation of the driver. Another computer, if you reinstall the software cleanly, might do it. But you're right. Maybe you just do it on your computer. The problem is I don't think you can get the software. I think really you have one and only one choice. That high schooler I mentioned. Or somebody. You need to physically copy it off, and it may be thousands, but I think you do it sooner than later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You might need an older version of Windows. You might, who knows? But the software itself is needed to connect to the phone, so it could be an issue with the software as well. There you go. How to set up Palm Desktop on Windows 10, companionlink.com. I don't know. Palm Desktop 6.2, there it is. This is a good link. Thank you, Mike B. So you can download the Palm Desktop 6.2 installer. Once you can get it off, you can even sync this with your Android or iOS device. So they have Palm Desktop going back to version 4. One of those might work. This is probably what I would do. We'll put a link at techguylabs.com, Annie. And maybe get your tech guy to look at this link, but it actually has the software. And I think reinstalling the software either on your existing computer or have him do it on his computer, that's going to let it talk to at least, if it is the connector on the phone, then you're really stuck. But if it's completely possible, it's not the connector, it's just the software. So reinstalling the software might help. Because if you can get it to sync, if you can just get it to sync once, you're golden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it possible to get the connector fixed?
No, nobody's going to be able to do that. And the thing is, here's the thing. My real fear is if he or somebody else opens up the phone, you're running the risk that at that point it will stop working forever.
Afraid of that.
It's a real risk.
No way. We won't lose it. And I thought, sure.
The problem with tech guys is we're cocky sons of guns. We just assume that we can fix it no matter what. But this is so, this is so old. And I think that there's a real risk that, it could really be, something very easy to fix. Absolutely. Mm. You could open it up, just take the back off and go, oh, look, see this, we just need to fix this solder point or something.
Well, he did take the back off and looked, and he didn't notice that. But, of course, I'm assuming he would have, had the knowledge to notice that.
What he's going to do, which really worries me, is he's going to spray some contact cleaner in there and try to clean the contacts up. At that point... maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. The problem is you can't afford to have it not work. You really can't. Right?
Right, exactly. So is it the touching of the contacts or the spraying all over the phone?
It's a 105-year-old guy that you're doing open heart surgery on.
Yeah, okay.
It's a fragile ecosystem in there. We don't know what's going on. And I know it doesn't sound that old. It is.
Oh, it's old for computer work.
11 years is really old.
It's an antique.
It's an antique. So is it out of the question? Surely you got somebody around the office who could. It won't take that long to just go through this. You can still see the contacts, right? You can scroll through the screens.
Yeah.
It won't take that long for somebody to do that. I mean, if you really want to speed it up.
What will take long are my notes. I have pages and notes about my clients. And, Palm had, which I'm sure all of them have, is a place to put notes. And that's the part that is time consuming. It's not just names.
Yeah, I understand. So here's one thing you could do. Is you have, I presume, a real phone, right? A camera phone. No?
You mean a camera phone?
Yeah, just a camera. Any camera.
A camera.
Yeah, take the picture. Instead of typing it out, just scroll through it. Take a picture of each screen. Make sure you can read the screen. That would at least give you a backup.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Can you read this? Could you think if you were on this, if you had the phone on, you had the screen.
How small that screen is.
It's tiny.
For darn sure.
Yeah, the trick would be to do this right is to get a camera on a tripod or somehow a fixed position, all set with the focus and everything, and then put the phone on a flat surface, check the lighting, make sure there's no glare and everything, and then just, two people could do it, you could do it, you press up, arrow, take a picture, 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 and just go through it like that. That will be the fastest. And then if you've got those images, then go ahead and try to fix the phone, because worst case scenario, you've at least got the content somewhere safe. I'm just nervous about him opening it up in any way without having a good backup.
Yeah, I understand what you're thinking. And thank you for that, because I felt so insecure about it. I've been putting it off and putting it off.
Yeah.
Got to do something.
Yeah.
But
manually, I know it's a lot, but it's not as bad as it sounds. Especially, if you do the pictures, then you put it on a computer and somebody can see the pictures on a screen and be typing. It's not going to take somebody that long. In a day, they'll be able to get everything typed in.
So just take the pictures and put them.
You know what I'm saying?
If I'm using a separate camera,
if you have a camera, you put it on a little tripod, get it like a GorillaPod or something small, short, put on your desk, okay? You put the camera on the desk, pointing down. You put the Trio on the desk. Make sure, look through the viewfinder of the camera, make sure it's focused, there's no glare, you can read the characters. It may not be perfect, but you can at least read the characters, right? And then you literally just take a picture of every screen. Scroll through your notes, take a picture each page. You're backing it up is what you're doing. It's not the ideal backup because it's just pictures.
But and then I'm trying to remember, because normally I put that on when I do pictures for houses, I would put that on either on a CD or something. So in this case, I'm just
Do you have a computer?
Well, I have the desktop. I mean, the laptop that I have.
Oh yeah, okay.
Went down. I got it back up, but then it was so freaking slow, and it was an XP. It's an older one too.
You need to get your tech guy to update you. Is the tech guy work in the office, or is he just a friend, or somebody you're hiring?
Someone I know, but he does tech.
Okay. It's time to upgrade your technology, and really, he should have been telling you to do this 10 years ago. It's really time.
Yeah. I don't understand. I think what my mistake obviously was, I thought with technology changes, they'd find a way to easily do this.
Well, they did in 2010.
No, they didn't have it in 2010.
You did. There was plenty of ways to do this. But the problem is you've waited too long. Now you have an antique. It's like saying, well, I have a Victrola. Why can't I play this record on my iPhone?
Yeah.
It's an antique. So the Trio Sync does everything you want it to do. If you had maintained it syncing, you already would have on your computer everything you need. But once the Trio Sync stopped working, that was the signal to you, uh-oh, I better stop using this Trio, get something more modern, and copy the data from the Trio Sync into this new thing, like an iPhone or something.
Yeah. Before you have to go back on, let me quickly ask you, do I take any risk if I switch to a new phone And if I just use this phone for the contacts on, you know.
Yes, you have one and only one copy of that phone, and it's dying.
I know, but that way I can be on a new phone now.
No, you can use a new phone and continue to use the Trio, but the urgent issue is that Trio is dying.
The Trio.
Yes, that's really an urgent issue. That's not something to be taken lightly at this point. Sorry. I guess somebody might help you. Hold on. Listen. Keep listening. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, vintage phones. 8888 Ask Leo. I really enjoyed talking to Annie, who is a real estate agent who has a 2007 vintage Trio. That was the Palm device, right? Trio was a successor to Palm phone that's dying, and she can't sync it anymore. But everything, her life, she's a real estate agent. Her contact list, her notes, everything is in that phone. So a couple of lessons I just want everybody to take away at this point is how important backup is. If you have important data and you have only one copy, you're really running the risk of losing it. I don't care, you know, if it's on a brand new super duper computer. Drives die, computers die, stuff gets lost. That phone, I don't know, what would you put the worth of that phone? It's got everything she's done over the last 12 years, all the clients, all the notes, everything is in one place. And it's not a super duper computer. It's a 12-year-old phone that is actually starting to limp. She can't get anything out of it anymore. It's dying. That should be a huge red flag. But even if you don't, you shouldn't have one copy of anything. If there's something that's important to you, I don't care if it's baby pictures, data, you know, your Bitcoin wallet. If you have something that's important to you, you always have to have more than one copy of it. Don't, maybe is using the word backup confusing people? You should always have more than one. What if you're a novelist and you wrote the great American novel and you typed it and it's 3,000 pages in manuscript form and it's beautiful. It's a work of art. But that's it. That's the novel, right? Wouldn't you want to go down to the copy shop and make a copy and maybe take that copy and store it in the bank or give it to your agent? In fact, I can think of at least two cases. A writer friend of mine whose home burned down about 15 years ago in the Oakland Hills fire had a manuscript of a novel, entire novel she'd written. She's quite well known. I don't want to use her name, but it burned down in the fire. Lost. And there's an even more famous example. I use this from time to time. The guy who wrote Invisible Man, Ralph Ellison, is famous for only having written one novel. It's considered a classic, one of the greatest novels, maybe the great American novel. Wrote only one novel. Actually, it's not true. He wrote two. His second one was destroyed, manuscript destroyed. He didn't have the heart to start over. Lost forever. Not just a loss to Ralph Ellison, but lost to all of us, right? If you only have one copy, I don't care if it's on manuscript typewritten or on a hard drive or on a Palm Trio, make another copy. And if you're in a position where you can't, ooh, now you should be very worried. And you should do whatever it takes. Annie could even take a camera and take pictures of the screen as she scrolls through it. Just do something. And ideally, if you've got important data, you shouldn't just have one copy. You should have three copies. You can have the original and two backups. Don't erase the original now. You only have two copies, right? Sometimes people say, well, I got a backup, and erase the original. No, no. Then you don't have a backup. You need three copies. Could be three backups. Could be an original, two backups. But you need three copies. That Ralph Ellison manuscript, we would have that novel if he'd had three copies. Different media, too, by the way. Now, you know, in those days, Ralph probably typed it on paper. Maybe he used carbon. That would be two different media. Remember carbon copies? Probably nobody does. Just dating myself there. But somehow, you know, maybe CD and USB or whatever. And one copy should be offsite. That's kind of important, too. Because like my friend in the Oakland Hills fire, she might have had backups. But if they were all in the house and the house burned down, then she doesn't have backups, right? So we call it 3-2-1 backup. Three copies. Two different media formats, just for safekeeping. You know, printed is fine. Printed and on a disk, that's okay. And one of them needs to be out of the house, off-site, away from the office. This is how you keep your data safe. Anything less, you're running a risk. Now, maybe we have an answer, because I think we've got Bob on the line from San Diego, who's a good Samaritan. He heard Anne. He heard Annie's plea. Hi, Bob.
How are you?
So you have a similar situation.
No, I still have my Palm device, and it still works fine. But I want to tell you what we did. In 2012, when I got my first Apple phone, Apple took 4 months to get my information from my phone into the Apple phone. And we used Outlook. And we took Outlook because it was backed up on the computer and moved Outlook somehow. I don't know exactly. But if she gets an Apple iPhone, I'll tell you what the gentleman said to me. He said to me, let me tell you first, Steve Jobs would like to have everybody in the world have an iPhone. And he said, therefore, they will bend over backwards to get your information in no matter what it takes. And so that's what it took. It took 4 months because I had about 8,000 contacts. And I had all different contacts, just like I heard what she was saying. And it was downloading 20,000, 15,000. So we finally, and the engineers finally worked on it, and we finally got it down to about 9,000, give or take. And so little by little, I had about 1,000. And over the next couple of years, I'd go through and get the duplicates out. But if you get an Apple iPhone, they will bend over backwards to help you.
Good. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I don't. The issue now is not what to do with it once you get it out of the phone. We could solve that. That's solvable. That's not hard to do at all. The issue is get it out of the phone. Hey, thank you. Mike B in our chat room just sent me. There's a Wikipedia article called Lost Work, which is documents of works that have been lost forever, in many cases because they weren't backed up. August Strindberg destroyed a play called The Bleeding Hand immediately after writing it. He was in a bad mood, and so he just tore it up. A French composer, Alberic Magnard's house was set on fire by German soldiers in 1914, destroying his unpublished scores. Sylvia Plath's unfinished second novel disappeared. There are audio recordings of the Beatles taped over or destroyed. The first Super Bowl taped over. They, at the time, I don't remember which network broadcast the first Super Bowl, but at the time, videotapes were expensive. The network said, well, nobody would ever want to see this again, and reused it. Reused it. Hundreds of works by the Norwegian composer and pianist Geir Tveit were lost due to a house fire in 1970. 4/5 of his works, symphonies, concertos, choral works, operas, piano works, lost forever. I can go on and on. Back up. Back up, please. Please back up. What is it? Maybe people think, oh, it's digital, it's safe. It's less safe. Truthfully, you're probably safer if you typed it out and put it in the desk drawer. At least then it would have to be, some disaster, some act of God to destroy it. A computer could be, a cosmic ray. Now, we've got an astronomer here, an astrophysicist from the university in San Diego, San Diego State. Doug, tell me, because people laugh at me when I say this. I've always said that a cosmic ray, a stray particle from the sun, could hit the hard drive in such a way that it flips a bit. There's enough energy in it to flip a bit. And if that bit isn't important, now most of the time your hard drive is like the Earth. It's mostly water. It's mostly empty. But if it hit a bit at a critical point in the hard drive, it could keep the system from booting. It could make your data unreadable. That's reasonable, right?
Absolutely.
What kind of cosmic ray would do that?
Alpha
particle or
alpha particles, positrons.
See? He's a physicist. A positron could do it, kids. See, they laugh at me when I say that. The solar wind. It blows no good. It's an ill wind that blows your hard drive away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls coming up in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Super Bowl I was on CBS, so blame CBS for erasing the tape. That was early enough that probably, it was unusual even to record stuff, right? Although, I'm trying to remember, I think it was the first episodes of The Tonight Show that Johnny Carson hosted. Those are lost as well, right? They're gone forever. But we have Jack Parr videos. I don't know how they recorded them. Kinescopes or something, right? Mr. Quest says, CBS taped over Super Bowl I for the match game. Yeah. Line 3, Austin, Norwalk, California. Hello, Austin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Oh, pretty hot down here. But I had a question and a comment. If there was time, should I do a question or comment first?
You got time. I'll do both, my friend. Start with whichever you want.
Okay. So I remember what you were saying yesterday about when you started the show talking about the researchers found that they made the new processor, like, what they say, 10 nanometers long or something like
that? Oh, well, this was yesterday. We were talking about the fact that Intel was having trouble making 10 nanometer processors, but that scientists in, I believe, in Holland have created a new transistor that is one atom. And now that's been done before at superconducting temperatures at absolute zero, but they did it at room temperature. And because it's at room temperature and it's one atom, it requires 1/10,000th the power of a modern transistor, the kinds of transistors you have in your microprocessor. Now, I don't know how close they are to making that a reality. Maybe there's all sorts of issues manufacturing it, but that's a pretty cool thing. And I was talking about it just to say that we're not at the end of the line when it comes to innovation. There's that famous quote from a patent examiner, I think in the early 1900s, saying, we don't really need a patent office anymore. Everything has been invented. Boy, was he wrong.
Yeah. Well, I'm not much of a computer science guy, but I have a basics in physics. So I believe the average atom is about half a nanometer, and I'm assuming using silicon.
Oh, that's interesting. So a 10 nanometer would be essentially 10 atoms width. I mean, 20 atoms width.
Right.
20 atoms. Oh, that's interesting. So if you had a one atom, wow, that'd be half a nanometer.
And yeah, wow. That would pretty much, for our mode of where we're using computers right now, that would be basically the limit. And
you'd get quantum effects at some point, right? We'd get so small you wouldn't be in macro physics, you'd be in quantum physics.
Yeah. And the reason is something called the uncertainty principle, if you're familiar with it.
Oh, old Heisenberg. Yeah, I went to school with him. Yeah, he says, everything's uncertain.
Yeah, basically you get down to those levels and weird things are happening.
Yeah.
Electrons popping in and out of existence. And when you have two circuit wires that close to each other, you can get electrons.
Isn't that amazing?
Circuit.
Yeah.
Spontaneously. There's no way to control it or predict it. So that would be the limits of Moore's law.
Something can be in two places at once.
Yeah.
Not anywhere at all.
The only way to get past that right now, at least theoretically, is quantum computers. And, we're still a little ways from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I wonder where we are with quantum computing. Everybody talks about that a lot. And I know crypto scientists are worried about it because, in theory, a quantum computer would be fast enough to break our current systems of public key cryptography. But I don't know. If I were a betting man, I wouldn't say, well, we'll have that in a year or two. I think we're a little ways off from.
We're actually not as far as people think. I'd say we're about 50 years away. But
50. Good. All right. I'll be gone by then. I can still use my PGP. What's your question?
My question is, so basically I got the Oculus gear, and I got it specifically because I'm a maps guy. I love maps, and I got it for the Google Maps, Google Earth VR, and it wasn't so some fiddling around that I discovered that Google Earth VR doesn't even work with Gear, so I was wondering if you knew. And when are you going to make Google Earth VR compatible with Gear?
Well, I'm looking. Oculus lists Google Earth VR in their Gear store. So you're saying it doesn't work? I haven't tried it.
Well, I mean, I guess it has to be compatible with a platform, and I guess it's only compatible right now with the HTC Vive or something like
that. Oh, yeah. It's in the Gear V. Oh yeah, it's a Rift. You need a Rift. You can't use the Go or the Gear VR. I see. Yeah. So right. So now that's a fairly hefty setup because now in order to use an Oculus Rift, you need a pretty powerful PC with dedicated GPU. I think I can't remember, but I think that you needed a 960 or a 970 or better. So, yeah, my kid has Oculus Rift on his gaming PC. He also has HTC Vive. He's a lucky kid. He gets the hand-me-downs from the tech guy. And he has, in order to do that, I had to get a fairly hefty system with I think he has a 1070 and an i7. So, yeah, the Gear is basically based on your Android device. It's just not as hefty. You might look at, I wonder if they have Google Earth VR for the Oculus Go. The Go is in between. It's only a couple $100. It doesn't require a dedicated phone anymore. Yeah, I mean, Google Earth, I'm pretty sure it's pre-rendered, so I would think it would work. You know, you got me, I don't know. Yeah, that would be cool. I'm a map guy, too. I love it. And that is an interesting use of VR. Google Earth allows you to swoop and zoom in between buildings, look at a three-dimensional rendering of Paris, go fly around the Eiffel Tower, stuff like that, and they're actual renderings of the buildings. So it's not imaginary. It's actual Paris. That's pretty cool. Hey, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is coming up. It's time for a photo review, so get your shoes ready right after this. Yeah, that was the Heisenberg I knew. Walter White. What is my name? Mr. Marquardt.
Guten Tag.
How's life? Did you sell out on the Lofoten yet?
It's all good.
Yay.
It's all
good.
Yay. It's all good. I've just put the first tour for 2020 online now.
2020?
Where are you going in 2020? Siberia, Lake Baikal.
Oh, Baikal would be cool.
Big ice journey around and on Lake Baikal.
Baikal was created by the asteroid hitting the Earth, right?
Huge.
That's the one that's a big, big crater. Is it the largest lake? I think it is.
It is the largest freshwater lake. It holds about 20% of the world's freshwater reserves.
Whoa. That is mind-boggling.
And the clearest lake. It has a microorganism in it that's only there and that does a really good job in keeping it clean.
It eats the fish poop. Does it? Are there fish in Baikal?
Yes, there are. There's I forgot the name. There's a fish in there too that is only there. It's very tasty.
Wow.
Very tasty. Someone told me if you're on a boat on Lake Baikal in summer,
yeah,
and you drop a coin, you can watch it sink for about a minute.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Wow.
That is very crazy.
Well, Flickr's still only using Flash for their slideshow. So.
It is, but then this time it's not that many photos. So.
Really? Shoes did not inspire.
Well, it's difficult. You can do just, you could take it literally, or if you want to kind of think outside the box, it's not so simple.
All right. Well,
and it's summer. We had a big heat wave here for a couple months.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that a lot of the participants are not from the U.S.?
I don't know.
I wonder.
I don't know. I would expect most
it's
of
probably
them
a lot of Marquardt people. You think
that's all? It's my family, you know.
It's your family,
family and friends. Huge family. Marquardt's everywhere.
Are there?
No,
no.
it's not an uncommon name here, though. There are areas where you find a lot of Marquardts, but then they're sometimes written differently. And when I was little, I thought it was very unique until I saw a Berlin phone book and it had like 30 pages of mark words.
Wow. Well, you know, when I was growing up in Providence, Rhode Island, there were 21 Leo Laportes.
Mm-hmm.
What are you drinking? What is that you just had? Was that a little Tuborg it looked like?
Alcohol-free beer.
Yiver fun.
There's no alcohol in this.
Niels Bohr's favorite drink was Tuborg, I'm told.
Yeah.
Back when Heisenberg and Niels and I hung out.
Not a fan. You and Heisenberg, yeah.
Me and Heisenberg. All right, let's get your lower third up. Let's get the music up, and in 1 minute we will be Marquarding. It's time once again to talk to Chris Marquardt, our professional photographer and photography coach. Chris hosts the Tips from the Top Floor podcast at tfttf.com. He also hosts some amazing photographic workshops. Chris, you were saying you've just set up your first workshop for 2020?
It's a bit crazy this time around, but you know, it's a tour that we've done before. We go to Siberia, to Lake Baikal, on the ice at the end of winter, where the ice is still carries well, and we'll be on and around the lake with cars and explore Siberia, which is amazingly beautiful, great bunch of people. I just put it online. You can't book it yet. We still have to finalize a few things. But February 2020, we'll be back to the depth of Russia.
Discoverthetopfloor.com if you want to see all his workshops. You like cold weather, it seems.
Oh, ice is amazing.
From a photographic point of view, I guess.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's not that we're freezing there. We have warm clothes. We get warm clothes from there. So I don't even have to bring, like, special ice clothes, and then the cars are nice and warm, so we hop out of the cars, take pictures, hop back into the cars, have a drink.
Have a drink is the key right there.
Like, it depends on the drink, though.
Sounds like fun.
Well, it is. I've done it twice. I'm doing it again.
discoverthetopfloor.com. Now, what do we want? I guess we have a photo review today.
We do. We have the shoe assignment to look at, and It yielded some interesting photos. Let me.
I think we were way too, and I include myself in this because I took a picture of shoes, and I think we were very literal minded in this case.
Most of the photos are of actual shoes. Yes, that's true.
There's a horseshoe. That's a
different meanings.
Yeah. The shoe is pretty much shoe. Yeah.
I admit that was not an easy one. Let's see how we can do for the next one. I've, again, chosen three photos to review, and the first one is by Edward Pierce.
And I like this one. This one's creative.
It is from an artistic point of view, it's not really that interesting because it's a snapshot of the back of a delivery van. But what is in the delivery van is interesting because it's like a 6 foot high red shoe, a giant shoe. And the thing I love about this is that, well, first of all, it's clear where you want to look because the red is kind of the magnet in the photo. It's also the thing that is very unusual. Don't expect that size of a shoe in a car. And it's padded, and it's held in there with some rope. And the thing I love about this is that there's so many stories in this picture because it can mean so many different things. I've no idea why there is this shoe in there. So, of course, my mind goes into overdrive and tries to kind of explain why there is this big shoe.
So you did say something interesting, and of course, I don't want to hurt Edward's feelings, but you said it's kind of snapshotty. What makes this more snapshotty and less of an artistic creation?
Well, I mean, he didn't have the choice of where to stand. I think he's shooting this from the car. That's what it looks like. So there's an electricity pole in the back that is wonky. You can see this straight next.
So what would you do to make it better? I mean, would you get out of the car, I guess?
Well, of course, that was probably not an option, but I would make it straighter. I would try to keep that electricity pole straight. and not at an angle.
If you have a straight line in a photo and it's not straight, it bugs people a little bit.
It does, especially if that line is right next to the edge of the photo where it becomes really clear that the camera hasn't been straight. That's a bit of a pet peeve of mine, but it doesn't take anything away from that photo because it is so
it's
weird,
a cool photo.
You know?
Yeah,
it is. Next one I chose is by Greg Chess 2000, title roadrage.jpg. And I'm not sure how much rage there really is, but it's a black and white photo, an interesting aspect ratio. It is a very wide photo, wider than 16 by 9. So Greg Chess 2000 cropped that probably after the fact. And it shows a pair of legs with shoes on a skateboard carving, like being at an angle. And the reason I chose this is, well, first of all, the subject is very clear. I like the contrasts in it. And I love the amount of what we call negative space that Greg Chess 2000 left in the photo. There's the entire left left half of the photo is pretty much nothing in there. So you can feel that. You don't see the person, you just see the legs. So you can kind of fill in that part because the photo is not showing you everything. So you have to kind of get active. And the left part of the photo, that would be an ideal, like a poster or something. There's so much space. You could put some text on there, some copy on there. Could be a double page in a magazine.
Oh, interesting.
You know, with left half being the headline, the headline and the first part of the copy, and then you just flip over. It really gives a lot of options. That kind of a photo gives a lot of options.
If there's a moral here, it's that sometimes my temptation when I'm, you know, photos of a thing is to put that thing smack dab in the middle. And that's often not the right choice, even if that's the subject of the photo.
And in this photo, there is no doubt what the subject is, no matter where you place it, because there is nothing else in the photo.
Right. So that works more interesting really well. I like it. If it's not in the middle. There's more going on, I guess. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Gerald Wiley has a photo. It's a color photo. Title is definitely not a hardcore hiker. It's a hiker in the forest and it's wearing jeans and he has a camera in his hand and it's shot from behind. And what I love is from a very low angle.
Yeah, I love
The camera is pretty much almost right above the ground, shooting slightly upwards. The shoes are kind of the central thing in the photo, even though you kind of follow the legs and you end up looking at the camera probably. Nice leading lines because it's a wide angle photo, so all the lines kind of point towards the middle where the person is, and where everything around is forest and green and brown tones. The person has a pair of blue jeans on and that sticks out. Also, that's in focus, so it kind of is clear that this is a subject. And this one works really well with being in the center of the photo. And of course, again, like in the previous photo, you only see half of the person. So again, you are going to put your mind into overdrive to fill in the blanks about that person. So yeah, again, cool photo, Gerald. Good job.
I like it that it's a wide angle lens, because when you get close to something in a wide angle lens, there's this distortion that is interesting.
Makes it interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Really nice. Well, there we go. There are three of some of the pictures that people submitted to our Tech Guy group on Flickr for our assignment. But now it's time for a new assignment. What do you want?
It is. Yes. And we had Shu as the last assignment. We are going to stay with the theme of clothing. And the next assignment is hat.
You picked that one for me, I think.
You love your hats, I know.
I have a rather large collection. All right.
But
so.
Also, hat can be used in different contexts. So
sure,
we'll.
Sure.
I hope a few people think outside the box.
If you have a great image, you can upload it. You got about a month to do it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group at flickr.com. It's free to join. So don't worry about that. But do tag it with the word hat so we know it's a submission. And in about a month, Chris will go through, actually a little more because I'm going on vacation, so are you. So maybe 6 weeks, we'll have some pictures to talk about on the show. Thank you, Chris. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Very nice. Talk to you in about an hour and 20 minutes.
An hour and 20 minutes. I'll be here.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Talk to you then.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Little research from our professor of astrophysics from San Diego State. He tells me that an IBM study, was it a couple of years ago?
90s.
Close enough. I don't think the rate of cosmic rays has changed significantly in the last 20 years. In the 90s, said that on average, you could expect one bit flip due to a cosmic ray every month for any given 256 megabytes of memory. So that's actually quite a high rate, if you think about it. A bit flip per month in 256 megs of memory. Now, memory's a lot denser than it used to be, so maybe, that rate has changed. But still, that's, not insignificant. The problem is where that bit flips. If it most of, your memory, your RAM, or your hard drive, most of it's really just not used. A lot of it is stuff that, maybe you got a U instead of a T in your word processing document. But on the other hand, if it hits that bit in a binary file, in a program file, that's all it takes to make that file crash. So it's really not, I think the reason I bring this up is I think people assume that, it's on the hard drive. It's safe. It's not. It's really not. And, of course, when you're using computers in critical systems, servers and the like, they'll use something called error-correcting memory, ECC RAM, for precisely that reason. So if a bit does get changed from a 1 to 0 by a cosmic ray or something else, it'll notice it and fix it. Most people at home don't use ECC RAM, but most servers do. And if you get a fancy mission-critical computer system, you might have ECC RAM in your computer system. Actually, hard drives have their own correction system. They have to. Hard drives are stunningly unreliable. Really, cosmic rays are a tiny factor in the reliability of hard drives. More often, they just, stuff stops working, fails. Every hard drive, when you get it, has a table of bad sectors. Can't hold a bit. And that bad sector table is constantly updated by the hard drive software and added to. And so as you use your hard drive, it's imperceptible. Hard drives are so big, losing a sector, even if you lost a sector a day, you probably wouldn't notice it. But regularly, the hard drive says, that count that one out. Don't use that one anymore. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. 888-827-5536. Patrick's in Palo Alto. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
So I got a small laundry list of little things. Nothing to take too long.
No, that's fine. That's good. That's like I said, it's Sunday. It's a relaxing day. Take your time. What can I start with?
Awesome. So the first one is WhatsApp. I listen to your show pretty regularly, and I try to be pretty conservative about programs I put on my systems and backing up and all that. WhatsApp is something that would be very convenient to me, and at the same time, I'm a little concerned of putting anything that has the expansiveness of WhatsApp on my phone because I've got bank stuff and work stuff. And so what is your opinion on that particular app? Is there anything I should be worried about if putting it on my phone? Should I buy a secondary device to do it?
Oh, no. First of all, WhatsApp's owned by Facebook. In fact, Facebook paid a pretty penny for it. They bought it with cash and stock. The stock went up so much that it's roughly estimated that they paid $32 billion for an app.
Okay.
That tells you how important WhatsApp is to them. The danger of WhatsApp is not that it's going to be malicious. As long as you get it from, the Google Play Store or Apple's App Store, it's not going to be malicious. It is a Facebook app. So we know that Facebook trades in information. That's, Facebook charges you nothing for any of its services. But the way they make money is by gathering information about their users and then offering advertisers targeted advertising. So they don't say, Hey, you want to know what Patrick's been up to? They don't sell that. That's not something an advertiser can get. But what an advertiser can say is, I want men 35 to 54 in Palo Alto, California, who have a college education and are unmarried. They can even go farther. In fact, just this week, the Department of Housing and Urban Development has kind of queried Facebook because they believe that Facebook's targeted advertising can be used to discriminate in housing. Because you can also say, and Facebook knows this stuff in very interesting ways. For instance, it's estimated that with only about 20 or 30 likes, you know, when you like something on Facebook or like a page, with only about 20 or 30 of those, Facebook can tell your sexual orientation, your political orientation, your gender, and more. And of course, as you continue to use Facebook or WhatsApp, because it's exactly the same, and Instagram exactly the same, they're collecting that information over time. They can do things, and this is apparently, according to ProPublica, which is a nonprofit journalistic enterprise I really like, they have sold advertising that discriminates against people. I have an apartment complex. I don't want any African Americans applying. I don't want anybody, I don't want any Jewish people applying. You can actually buy ads. You know, I don't want anybody, and none of those liberals living in my housing complex. You can buy ads on Facebook where they know about these things. So
where do they get this information? Is it from my phone or from my use of their app?
It's from your use of their app. Now, every time you use an app, you are leaking information about location from your phone. Are you using iPhone or Android? Okay, so the iPhone really tries hard to keep apps from knowing about other apps and what they're doing. So it's unlikely that WhatsApp would know that you just opened Safari and went to a page. It won't know that. But it does know your location.
My bank stuff is safe.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't know what bank you use.
I assume everybody knows my location if they have it on.
You're walking around with a GPS device in your pocket. I mean, Facebook knowing it to me is less of a concern than others, frankly. So, you have to. So basically, using WhatsApp, you're giving face. Now, the founders of WhatsApp, most very famously, have left Facebook. In fact, leaving tens of millions, maybe more, of dollars on the table in that big purchase because they didn't like how Facebook had told them, "Oh, we'll never put advertising in WhatsApp. We'll never use it to spy, et cetera, et cetera." But in April, Jan Koum, who was one of the founders, quit Facebook. He left, I think, $40 million in stock on the table to do that. That's how seriously they took it. They were purchased about 3.5 years ago. And you know how when you buy a company like WhatsApp, you say in order to keep the founders around, all right, but you're not going to get all the money right away. You have to be here a certain amount of time. Brian Acton left earlier. Koum actually has been doing a weird thing. He's been visiting once a month to keep his stock vesting active. you don't want to leave too much money on the table. Anyway, so they're concerned. I think that concern is about privacy more than anything else. So that's something you should be aware of. Now, if you're talking about encryption, we know that WhatsApp is encrypted, but we also know that Facebook can see what you're doing. And I would say it's good enough encryption, but it's not perfect encryption. If you want to have private conversations, I wouldn't do it on WhatsApp. In fact, the Department of Justice is going after Facebook right now. They want to wiretap Facebook Messenger to spy on a gang, MS-13, in Fresno, California. So far, Facebook's pushed back, but they can't win that fight in the long run. So
okay, that's interesting. No, for me, it's more bank stuff. I don't put anything that's personal on any social media site or anything. I just want to make sure no one can hack into my phone, get bank accounts.
No, you're safe, especially on an iPhone. You know, all of the hackers that I know and the journalists and the sophisticated people who go to things like the Black Hat and DEF CON conference last week in Las Vegas, they would not go there. They would not go there with an Android phone. They will only go there with an iPhone. It's just too risky. So, but your friend Phil Zimmern, the creator of PGP, the guy who really started email encryption, he carries an iPhone. He says, I wouldn't carry an Android phone. So I think with an iPhone, you're pretty safe.
Okay. Sounds good. Second question.
I got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Outdated Mac or iPad? I know upgrading the software, but once it's old and you can't, should you really just upgrade the machine or can you get a couple years out of use?
As long as it's operating fine, the programs you want are working, I wouldn't worry about it. You're still getting security patches. You're just not getting the most recent operating system. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay. So an old iPad 2 in the kitchen is fine.
That's fine.
Okay. Sounds good.
Hang on. I gotta take a break. Okay. But I can talk to you. We'll talk some more. I can answer all that. I don't wanna cut you off. 888 Ask Leo, the phone number, techguylabs.com, the website. We got another hour to come of Tech Guy Show. I hope you'll stick around. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. So what else did you want to know, Patrick?
Backing up I have a Mac. It's got 512 of SSD, but it's filling up with pictures. And I'm doing a very easy, just plugging in a time machine. I want to know if I plug in an external drive, will the time machine then back up the entire system with external drive? Or if that gets...
I'll be honest. I wouldn't... here's what I would do. Get a program called Super Duper.
Super Duper.
It's by Shirt Pocket Software. And I use it in conjunction with Time Machine. I'm a backup Nazi. That's probably not the right term, but I'm crazy about backup. So I use Time Machine. It's a kludgy backup. It's not the best backup in the world, but it's convenient. I think of Time Machine as a way to get previous versions of documents more than anything else.
Okay.
For a real backup, what you'd like is to take this external drive you got. Is it as big as the internal drive?
Yes.
Yeah. Super Duper will make a bootable, identical copy of the internal drive onto the external drive so that it's identical bit for bit.
Okay.
And that way, if the internal drive dies, you can press the option key and boot to the external drive, and it'll be exactly the way it was. And you can make it on schedule update that so that it's always up to date. And I do that daily. Every night about 3 in the morning, my iMac wakes up, updates the external drive so it's still identical to the internal drive using Super Duper. It's great. I highly recommend it.
Does it do just changes or does it do the entire thing? Seems like it would take a long
time. First time it does the entire thing.
Okay.
And then the next time, you have to tell it this. There's different kinds of backups, but it will do, they don't call it incremental backup, smart backup, I think. It will do it will say, oh, these files are changed, so it will update just those. It's still a little slower than... Because it goes through the whole drive to make sure there's no changes. But that's why you do it in the middle of the night. It takes half an hour.
Okay.
It's very fast.
And if I wanted to add to Super Duper the external drive, just like Time Machine, so I've got... Because what's happening is I'm running out of space on the machine, and I can't put a bigger drive in because it's a MacBook Pro. So if I want Super Duper to copy the drive and the external as one bundle, or even Time Machine to back it up all as one bundle, is that doable?
Oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't back up Time Machine. If you're saying you want to remove those photos from the drive?
Well, I want to expand my drive almost virtually so that my machine has two drives.
Ah.
And I don't always have to take it with me, but almost like if it were a desktop, I'd have two drives.
Well, yeah, I do that all the time.
I can leave one behind, but then I want to back up the entire system.
Mac OS makes that very easy. What I do is I have a massive Drobo attached to my computer, and I keep all the big data, photos, movies, anything large, I keep on that. And then I alias it into my local directory. So if you have an external drive with your photos there, you can make an alias that is on your internal directory to the pictures. And it'll iTunes, whatever you use, will photos, it'll just say, oh, yeah, it's right there. It'll think it's in the same place. So alias is your friend on that.
Okay, because I did this wrong about 10 years ago, and I had duplicates of everything that I had to go to.
Yeah, you got to be careful about that. On the other hand, a duplicate is a backup, right? So what you want to do is you want a duplicate, but you want a duplicate somewhere where you know that that's the duplicate.
Sure.
So Super Duper with a single external drive, highly recommended. Time Machine, I do this too. I have Time Machine running on another, because external drives are cheap, on another external drive, and that's mostly just so I can press that magic button and say, oh, what's the previous version? I never use it, but it's there. So, I still have offsite backup, which I would recommend as well. If you want to free up space, you could say, take an external drive, move your photos to that external drive.
Uh-huh.
Anything you're not going to – I do this when I travel because I don't want all my pictures on that laptop. I want to leave room for new pictures. So I have all the images on an external, and then I point to it with an alias on the internal. So I say, oh, yeah.
And then how do you back up that external without worrying about duplicating that external
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yep. Super Duper probably does not back up the external and only backs up the alias. So you would want to then run a, you Super Duper can run backups on anything, your time machine, whatever. So you might run you what Super Duper wants to do is take over the whole disk. So you might want a separate disk now that has or a separate partition on the, you could partition the new disk into two parts if it's big enough. And then you could have Super Duper backup anything, any folder, any volume, anything you want, and keep it up to date.
Is there a better way to do what I'm doing? I wish I would have just got a terabyte in my MacBook Pro, but I got 500.
No, I think what you're saying is exactly right. I have an iMac with a terabyte internal, but I don't want to fill that up. So I have an 8 terabyte Drobo. I have a 4 terabyte, drives are so cheap, 4 terabyte Seagate. That's the time machine. And then the Drobo is a backup, is backed up to a duplicate 8 terabyte drive. So the data drive is backed up separately. And that's what you would need to do.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
I never hear you live, but I hear you on the podcast all the time.
Thank you. I'm glad you listen. That's nice.
Yeah. Appreciate all your information.
Do you work in tech, Patrick?
I do not work in tech, actually. I work, I have a driving school I own.
Oh, neat.
I'm a part-time teacher at a high school, yeah.
We were just talking about you. Because Lisa and I, we were talking about learning to drive because our 15-year-old's learning to drive. And I said, yeah, I learned in Santa Cruz. She learned in Petaluma. It was very quiet. I learned in Santa Cruz. I said, it was quiet. But then, and this was back when the school did driver's training, they would take us out on Highway 1, which is a 2-lane, full-speed highway, and say, okay, pass that car. And we both were saying, was the teacher on Valium? How did the teacher survive? What do you do? Because you're being driven by neophytes in dangerous situations. Do you have even a brake pedal? Do you have your own brake pedal?
Yeah, I've got full dual control.
Law
requests one brake, but it's just ridiculous. And then most of the situations you just see so often, you can see
you know what's happening. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So you feel safe. You don't feel it. Because when I taught my daughter to drive, I just basically said, you know, I might die. But that's okay. All I could do was say, well, you know, I got all Buddhist on it. I said, whatever happens. Because otherwise I'd be going crazy every 5 seconds.
No, you get desensitized. And
I guess you do.
Coming. Yeah. You just, I think it's what happens in any profession that's kind of higher stress at the beginning. After a while, you just do learn to live in the environment.
You live with the stress.
No big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm ever in the area, Petaluma, I will hook you up.
Drive on.
Free lesson.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah, my 15-year-old would appreciate it.
Awesome. He has a permit already.
Not yet. He'll be 15 and a half. He's 15 and a half this month.
I want to visit you at some point. I know you have a live audience. I want to take my daughter there.
Oh, please.
She's young, and I introduced her into tech already because I think it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that'd be hysterical. Michael would love it. So he'll get his permit when we get back from vacation late September. So come anytime after September 22nd.
Yeah. Mention it on the air, and once I hear it, I'll set up a schedule.
You'll know when I'm back. Yeah. Hey, awesome. Thanks, Patrick. Awesome. Take care.
Leo. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO is my number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach me via Skype out if you're not in that area. And still shouldn't cost you anything because it's a toll free number in the U.S. 888-827-5536. Any app you put on your smartphone can, to some degree or another, spy on you. In fact, here's what I use as the circumstantial evidence for this. More and more I'm seeing free apps from companies, you know, news apps and stuff. You wonder, well, why would they spend a lot of money, time, making the app, and then, of course, it costs money and time to support the app and give it away absolutely free. Now, I'm sure there are altruistic people in the world who just do it because I love it out of the goodness of my heart. I actually have a friend like that, Kevin Rose. He's a very successful entrepreneur and venture capitalist. He doesn't need the money. He created a wonderful meditation app called Oak because he likes the process. He loves making apps. But most people... If they're doing an app, there's something they're doing. And it's my thesis that the reason is getting an app on somebody's phone is valuable. And so what you want to do, Android or iOS, when you install an application, is look at the permissions, the things they ask for. Almost certainly, they're going to ask for location information, but maybe more. It pays to kind of consider why somebody is giving this away and what they're doing with it. And there is a lot more information. Now, Apple's very careful to protect your privacy, I believe. They warn you when an app is following your location. You can, on an iPhone or an Android phone, as an app, request permission not only to get your location when the app's open, but when the app's not running, just all the time. You know, every 5 seconds, where is he now? Where is he now? Where is he now? I don't know. How valuable is location information? Well, what if the app could also put up a notification saying, hey, I see you're walking by the pants store. Pants 5% off right now if you go in and show them this ad. That'd be valuable, right? So you can see location has some value. Collecting a lot of information about you in other ways. For instance, maybe you have to sign in to use that app. Almost every app, even a free app, you have to set up an account, give them your email address, right? Maybe they can also, and this is where it starts to get a little scary, buy information from other sources and combine the information they know with the information they can buy. So once somebody has your location and your email address, they might also be able to go out of the market and ask Facebook, let's say, well, I'd like to know more about Leo's preferences. There's all sorts of ways. I think this is a difficult thing for all of us to kind of figure out what these apps are doing to keep an eye on us. Now, I think that also it's important to remember that we're getting something of value. So what you're weighing is, does the amount of information I'm giving up to this app worth the benefit I'm getting? And so here's my rule of thumb. I only install apps you can really use, you really want. And I bet you on your phone, you've got more than a few apps you haven't used in a while. You don't really need. You just put them on there. Seemed like a good idea. Fun game, whatever. Take those off. I would get rid of anything you don't use all the time. The newest version of Android, Android Pie, actually has a very nice feature. It kind of keeps an eye on what apps you open. And after a while, it'll say, it just did this to me. Hey, you know, you haven't used these apps in 6 months. If you deleted them, it would save you 8 gigabytes of storage. You want to do that? Maybe take advantage of that. I think that's a nice feature. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Line one's Dan in St. Pete, Florida. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Leo.
How you doing?
My apartment is about to be renovated in about 2 weeks, so they're going to put me up in a hotel until that's finished. And I want to know how I can protect myself on public Wi-Fi with, I'll be having my Chromebook, my Android phone, and hopefully I can bring my Chromecast and or Roku with me.
Nice. Are you, just out of curiosity, in your apartment, do you use the apartment complex Wi-Fi or your own Wi-Fi?
No, I have my own.
Okay. Because I was going to say, you're using public Wi-Fi if you use the apartment complex's Wi-Fi.
No, I understand that.
Yeah. So now you're going to be at a hotel, you're going to be somewhere, and you're going to be using public Wi-Fi. So this is actually a tricky thing. If you really were absolutely concerned about this, what I would go out and do is get something called a travel router. And I've mentioned before, devices from a company called Tiny Hardware Firewall. It's at tinyhardwarefirewall.com, and they make a variety of devices. But what a travel router does, you're going to need a router anyway, probably, right, as you travel around? Or are you going to be doing this? If you're mobile, then having a travel router is great, because essentially what happens is when you get to where you're going to be staying, the hotel or whatever, you pair the travel router to the hotel's Wi-Fi, and then the travel router becomes your Wi-Fi access point with your name, your password. That has several advantages. Depending on the router, you can use a VPN to protect yourself even further. But also, any incoming traffic is stopped at the router as opposed to at your computer. That means a bad guy who's on that network is going to have a lot harder time figuring out what you're doing. It protects you in other ways as well. But I think a travel router for anybody who does a lot of traveling and is going to... The problem, it's a little bit of a pain, but if you're going to be somewhere for a while, as sounds like you are, Then you just set it up once.
Like 3 weeks.
Yeah. You set it up once when you the day you get there. You leave it plugged in, and then when you get it, you know, come into your to your house, your temporary dwelling, your laptop doesn't join the hotel's Wi-Fi. It joins your travel router, and it's much, okay, much safer. So that's probably what I would do in your situation. You can keep using this, you know, the rest of the time when you're at coffee shops and so forth. There are a variety of different ways to do this.
Now I'm on Project Fi. Would that connect to the...
That's another good way. You know what? That's a great way to do it. Because you only pay $10 a gigabyte on Project Fi. That's Google's phone service. You just use the hotspot on your phone. That's pretty fast. That would be more than sufficient, and that's very protected. Yeah, if that's what... That's basically is a travel router, isn't it? And the thing about LTE, which is where your data is coming from, is it's encrypted. So that's probably the most secure way to do it, you bet.
Okay.
Turn your phone into a hotspot. Then you don't need to buy anything.
I've never tried it.
So. Yeah. No, I've used... In fact, when I travel, that's exactly what I do. I will use my Google Fi phone as a hotspot. We're going to travel... We'll be traveling in Europe next month. And Fi is nice because it doesn't charge you more outside of the United States. So I'll be absolutely doing that. Highly recommend that. That's actually you came up with a better solution than I did. Yeah, if you're willing to use your hotspot on your phone, that's a very good solution. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So these are the, this is good. They're having a sale. So this is in effect, a travel router. You see, you can either join a Wi-Fi network or use Ethernet, but you join the network, and this becomes an access point. You can turn on, if you wish, you can turn on OpenVPN or Tor. It will work even with a captive portal, which is a big deal. That's those... hotels have them where you have to go to this page first and say, you know, you're a guest and you agree to their policies and all that. It'll still work with that. What's nice is now once that's paired with that, you leave that in the hotel room. And then whenever you get in, your phone, your computer, everything are go to it, not the hotel Wi-Fi. So you're really protected. This is the one, the micro router that I carry with me because it's so small. It just plugs into a USB port or a portable battery. And it has two Wi-Fi radios, so it has incoming and outbound. And that's really handy, too. You can use these. These guys offer VPN service, but you don't have to use their VPN service. You can just use it as a travel router. And this is micro routers, the one I carry with me. This one is a little more sophisticated. They have funny names for this. This is the Kadesh THF, Tiny Hardware Firewall. And it's USB powered. You see, it has a little micro USB. So you could plug it in the wall. That's what I do with a USB adapter. It has dual radios. All of these do. So you can join the Wi-Fi or you can, the most secure would be turn Wi-Fi off on your laptop so that your laptop's not even visible to the outside world. Connect it via Ethernet to this thing. Have this thing join the hotel's Wi-Fi. And so the hotel's Wi-Fi comes into here is, you know, blocked, protected, filtered, and then goes via Ethernet to your laptop. That's the most secure. Then your laptop is really invisible on the network. They can't see the Wi-Fi or anything. This one you can't do that with. It doesn't have Ethernet. It's just, well, actually you could. I take it back because it shows up as an Ethernet. If you plug it into the USB port of your laptop, it shows up as Ethernet. So you could use this micro router and turn off Wi-Fi. That's what I carry with me. Really like it. No software needed. It, just works. You use your browser to configure it. And it's a little tricky at first to configure, but after you've configured it, it's not a big deal. Well, you got to look at the permissions. Yes, basically, Captain J. If an app, in general, when apps say, yeah, we want to be able to access your email or your contact list or your photos, they have basically full access to it. So you're always trusting. Anytime you put application software on your computer, you're trusting it. That's just the way it is. So only put software from companies you trust. You don't remember this, Michael Cozio. This came out before you were born. King Harvest, right? Wow, 1972. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Michael Cozio, our musical director. He's digging deep into the archives. When I first started in radio, Michael, they had most of the studio was taken up by shelving with LPs on the shelving. And before your show, you would go over to the LPs and you'd stack up a bunch of records you're going to play during the during the show. That's what we call the good old days, yes, back in the 1920s. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We go on with the show, and next on the line, Diane from Banning, California. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Hi.
I bought an Epson printer, copier, fax machine about 2 years ago.
They call those all-in-ones, yeah.
Yes, an all-in-one. And I've used it maybe a dozen times, and it's always worked perfect. Well, it ran out of the little cartridge that comes with it, you know, those little small ones.
Yeah.
It ran out of the black one. So I went and purchased the black one, put it in, and it's giving me the message, cannot recognize the following ink cartridge, which is the black one.
Did you get a cartridge manufactured by the same company as made the printer?
Yes. I got it from Staples. We got the same one, the same number, okay. The same, you know, kind Epson.
So
I took it back like three times.
And the same problem.
Pardon me?
And the same problem with all three, huh?
All three. And the people at Staples, one of the girls told me that this happens quite often, so they just keep replacing the cartridges and eventually it'll work. Well, it's not working.
Hmm.
Is there anything that I can do to make it recognize this cartridge?
Yeah, I don't. So it could be one cartridge, but since it's all three, then it does sound like the printer itself is having trouble. And be very careful that you get it in, and when you get it in, it clicks. There's a very physical chunk that gets it in. Usually, if it's not fully in, it'll say, "Well, I can't see it," because it has to actually make a electrical connection with that cartridge. It's very. You'll see on the cartridge that there's a contacts. There's copper contacts. That has to be fully connected.
So, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Okay, it lifts out pretty easy.
Maybe too easy. You have to push. Oh. You should have to push in a little plastic tab to lift it out. So let's make sure it's really in there, and you chunk it in nice and firmly. Otherwise, it won't come on. And, of course, immediately the printer will say, I don't see a cartridge there. So the other thing you might do,
as hard as I can, and it's not.
Well, try remove. It's not chunking. Okay. It's not clicking in place. Yeah, that makes me wonder. One thing you might do is remove all the cartridges, power the machine all the way down, and then put all the cartridges back in. Plug in the machine. You know, unplug it. When I say power it down, I mean unplug the back, so it has no power. And plug it in, and you did take the protective tape off the cartridge, right?
Yeah.
With sometimes there's plastic covers. Almost always there's tape to keep the cartridge from leaking in the box. So make sure you take all of that stuff.
That little gold connector there.
Yeah, that has to make a good contact, or otherwise the printer won't see it. Is the printer saying, I don't see a cartridge?
No, it's just saying I don't recognize it.
That's interesting. I wonder if Staples got a bad batch.
I went to two different stores.
Oh, well, that seems unlikely then.
And I'm thinking, because I went to a computer place. Oh, I called them on the phone. The number that they gave me, they say that they don't fix them. So I went to a computer place, and they told me that they're throwaways, that I should just buy another one.
Well, they don't charge. No, I don't think that's right. Even if you only paid $90 for the printer, it should work. You only used it a little bit. I'd bring the printer in and just to Staples or somewhere and have them put in the cartridge and see if there's anything that's going on. It could be that there was a bad batch of cartridges. I don't think Epson does this. Some manufacturers, and I should mention Epson's a sponsor of the show, some manufacturers put chips in their cartridges to prevent counterfeits or third-party cartridges. And it could. I don't think Epson is one of those companies, but it could also be that. So bring it into the store. I would take it to the store. It's not very healthy. Have the Staples guy look at the contacts, make sure they're clean. That sometimes the electrical contacts on the machine, maybe they got oil on them or ink on them, and they're not clean. Have him clean it up, put it in, because he'll know how to put it in. He's put in a few, one hopes, over time, and he can probably help you. That's what I would do. I'd bring it down there. I wish I could help you myself, but this is one. Sometimes we get the calls. I can't really do much from afar. I do my best. Mark, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. I have not a question, but I want you to tell me something. And here's why I want you to tell me that. My wonderful daughter's Pixel died. It will not turn on.
Yeah.
And she has a service contract, so they'll replace it. So it's going to, a new one's coming tomorrow. I was cleaning the old phone up, and I noticed she had a screen protector on it, that thick piece of plastic that goes over the screen.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that there's a crack in the screen. So I was wondering, there's a crack in the screen. The screen protector's covering the screen.
Yeah.
How the heck does touchscreen work with all that going on?
I don't actually use screen protectors because the problem with any screen is that's glass. And I don't care if it's Gorilla Glass 3 or what. The very nature of glass is if you strike it with a sharp object, it will crack. So every phone cracks. I don't care whether you put a screen protector on or not. The screen protector might help with scratches. Like if you tend to scratch it, the screen protector gets scratched, not the glass. You could pull it off, put another one on. If she's prone to that, maybe. But I don't use screen protectors because they get in the way. So modern screens are what we call capacitive. They actually, you know, the old screens, it was how hard you pressed. There was pressure in there. But modern screens just use the flow of electricity. That's why you can't use them with gloves on. You have to have something moist, like your finger, or, I don't know, a sausage would work. One of those string cheese things, that would work. Because basically, the capacitive touch, it's made of a electrical sensitive substrate and an electrostatic grid of wires over it, senses that the connection's been closed by your finger. It can work right through a appropriately designed screen protector. The crack, though, shouldn't make much difference. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's a new kind of touch screen that Microsoft bought this company. It's called Perceptive Pixel. And I don't think Microsoft's using it yet. But Perceptive Pixel, maybe they are. I'd be curious if Microsoft's using it. They do something called, and I just love the name, Frustrated Total Internal Reflection. But, and I guess they are, because that's how they can do the Surface Hub, the giant screen, because capacitive doesn't work so well. So when you touch the Frustrated Total Internal Reflection screen, you're actually scattering light with your finger, and there's cameras in the screen that detect the refraction caused by your finger. And so instead of electrical current being changed, and I gather that that's more of a touch. You don't see touch screens at, you know, 100 inches with capacitive, because I gather that that's just that's too much distance probably for the charge. But with the light, the camera says, oh, the light has been bent where your finger is touching, and that's where the finger is. And it can do multi-touch. Does 10-point multi-touch. I just love the name. Frustrated Total Internal Reflection. Or FITRI. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. Family problems. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We're talking about how touch screens work. The oldest touch screens, you remember these on things like that Palm Trio, that they weren't very good. The Palm had them. Were resistive. So the glass, or some, this was work with plastic too, in the screen, I think a lot of times they were plastic, would deform when you touched it, when you pressed it. So you have to press a little bit. It wasn't very, if you ever used one of these resistive touch screens that from the old days, the Newton, anything, you know, in the 90s was resistive touch. They just weren't very responsive. You had to press a little bit because it would deform the plastic and the electronics in the screen would sense the deformation and say, well, I think his finger's there. more modern screens, all the screens we use today in our cell phones, for instance, are capacitive. They sense your finger because it's electrical. It's closing an electrical connection. And that works quite well. Capacitive touch screens are great. Very responsive. They're quick. They can break. If a screen breaks and the wiring is broken by the screen, then a part of the screen will stop being responsive. And that's often the case when you crack your screen, is that some area of the screen no longer responds to touch. But the rest of it might. This phone might continue to work. And so many people I know use cracked screens and continue to use them because they don't want to get them fixed. It's expensive and time-consuming. There is another kind of touch screen I think is kind of interesting. The problem with capacitive touch, it doesn't work as well as you get the screens as they get bigger. Capacitive touch is fine on a laptop, but if you make a giant screen, an 80-inch screen like a giant TV, it's not going to work very well because the electrical charge that you're putting on the screen with your finger is so small, it just won't transfer all the way out. So these giant screens like Microsoft's Surface Hub, have you seen that? They have a 70-inch computer that you can touch. Use something called, I love this, frustrated total internal reflection, or FTRI. And this is quite clever. When you touch the screen, you scatter light. You know, the screen's still glass, but the light is scattered. There are cameras behind the screen. They detect the light change, and they say, oh, that's where the finger is. They can do 10-point touch just like a capacitive touch. FTRI. You won't see that. I don't know why. I suspect it's too complicated, and you know, having cameras behind the screen is probably more than a smartphone should or would want to do. But capacitive touch works fine. Works very, very well. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to line four now. Michael in Fountain, Colorado. Hello, Michael.
Yes. Bonjour, Monsieur Laporte.
Bonjour, Michel. Comment ça va?
Bien. Car not so good. Got hit by softball-sized hail.
Oh, when was that?
3 weeks ago.
Oh, ow. That hurts.
Yes. Took out both the rear window and the windshield.
Yikes.
Yes.
Oh, sorry about
haven't
that.
Haven't had it replaced yet because we're still getting hail.
Oh, golly.
Yeah. It's
I take it Fountain is at a certain altitude.
Yeah, well, Denver claims to be the mile-high city, but Colorado Springs is actually a few feet above a mile.
Oh, well, there so, you go. There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, called you about 3 weeks ago. Yahoo was changing their email thingy saying, you know, it's not going to work on, you know, going to have to change to Firefox or Chrome.
Yeah, yeah. I was so surprised they decided to stop working with Internet Explorer. But
yeah. Solved that.
Good. By using what, Chrome?
No, I was dual booting Windows 10 with Windows 7. So as soon as I went to Windows 10.
You start using Edge.
Yes.
Perfect.
Second thing, Ajit Pai. That is the guy in charge of the FCC, right?
Chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, yes.
Yes. Have you been paying attention to the troubles he's having?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The latest one, of course, you remember the reason that geeks don't like him too much is because they reversed net neutrality regulations.
Right.
And at one point, they opened comments at the FCC. And John Oliver, who's done this before on his late night show on HBO, said everybody should go to the comments section if you like net neutrality and say, keep it. I did. But so many people did, it brought the system down. At which point, Ajit Pai said, we were hacked, even though they weren't.
Right.
Now he's blaming the Obama era chief information officer for telling him they were hacked. But now he's saying, oh, yeah, I knew that we weren't hacked in January, but I couldn't tell Congress.
That's for Dick.
I couldn't tell you because it would be wrong. So he's now admitted lying.
Because it'd sound bad.
It would sound bad. He's now, because the Office of Inspector General of the FCC said, hey, you know what? We weren't DDoSed. We weren't attacked. That's, you know, it's not true. Pai says, it was very hard to stay quiet. But he was told not to say anything to anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Pi's big on blaming other people, isn't he? The thing about Pi to remember is he's a former lobbyist for Verizon, longtime lawyer for Verizon.
Right.
I think his interests really lie more with the big telcos and the internet service providers than it does with the people of the United States.
Well, it's like here in Fountain. We're in a poison zone from the military.
That doesn't sound good.
So, you know, they didn't want to release info on that because it was too embarrassing.
Yeah, well, it is embarrassing, but sometimes the truth needs to be told.
Other question. Level 3, did you notice that they'd been purchased by CenturyLink?
Oh, interesting. I did not. My friend Steve Gibson uses Level 3 for his hosting for us, for GRC.com.
Yeah, well, this is CenturyLink wants more power. Give us power.
Yeah.
And the president of Level 3 has gone to work as head of CenturyLink, and they are going to try and push fiber optic.
Well, I'm not against that. This is, you know, a long-standing tradition in internet service and telecommunications. For decades, we've seen these consolidation and merger going on. Remember they broke up the phone company?
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of all got back together again. There's just a natural tendency to aggregation. And I think it probably is because these companies believe that there's an economy of scale, that by being bigger, they can be more profitable. I'm kind of a fan in general of competition. I think the way free enterprise works best is when there are many competitive companies vying for your customer's dollar. That means that the customers, you know, get to choose the best company. It puts pressure on the companies to do a better job. When you only have a handful of companies, as we do in, for instance, the cell phone business, we're about to only have three big cell phone companies in the United States, competition diminishes. And as a result, I believe quality and innovation goes away. So I'm never a fan of this aggregation. I understand the business reason for it, and I guess you really can't stop it. What are you going to do? But I would love, you know, my dream would be that each community has three or four different internet service providers to choose from, and they all work to provide you with the best service. What a thought! Meanwhile, 86% of the country has best two choices: the cable company and the phone company. And a good portion of America doesn't even have two choices. They have one choice. Sigh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. I always wanted to be a pip.
This is the Marvin Gaye one.
Is this the Marvin Gaye one? Oh, I don't get to be a pip. It's a guy. I should have known. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did Marvin Gaye have pips? No. Only Gladys Knight had pips. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Hey, a big thanks to Michael Cozio, who's been amusing me with the music today. Thank you, Michael, our musical director. Thanks also to Kim Schaffer. She answers all your calls, grooms you. If she has to lick her fingers and get that cow lick down for your appearance on national radio. And they both do a great job each week, and I don't give them enough credit. Thank you, guys. Josh, Redding, California. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. It's, you know, I'm alive and breathing, so I'm not complaining.
All right.
All right. So my question is, so I recently just discovered the whole Twit deal. And
the whole Twit deal, I should explain, is my podcast network, This Week in Tech. Okay, go ahead.
There we go.
The whole Twit deal.
I used to watch you way back in, you know, when it was, you know, Tech TV, you know, late 90s.
Yeah.
All the way up until, you know, the G4 Tech TV. And then after that kind of went, I lost my connection.
So did Leo. Leo went too.
Yeah. So now, since then, I've been getting into enterprise IT, which is, you know, a little bit less sexy than the rest of the technological market. So with my rediscovery of your network, I've been hearing all these things. I'm like, I've never heard of this. I feel like Rip Van Winkle. You know, I'm just like,
well, I just, to reassure you that when Tech TV went out of business, I did not die. I continued on. And what I decided to do was, I'd always done radio. So I continued to do this radio show. Started this in 2004, right? Kind of a transition after Tech TV. And then the podcast came out a couple of years after that because Well, it just wasn't enough for me to work weekends. I had to do more. So we do lots of content.
Oh, yeah. It's just when the TV medium went away, I'm just like, oh, no.
Well, you know, we do video, too. I don't know if you know that, but if you go to twit.tv/live, you can watch our live stream of this show and all the shows we do.
I got that now. I discovered it last week. I'm just like, so I've been watching it. Like, I was catching up on the screensavers and all that.
Nice. Yeah, we brought that show back. Yeah.
Yeah.
NBC wasn't too happy about that, but... you know what happened?
They'll live.
They'll live. They don't care. We've been trying to buy the old shows from them. They go,
But no, you're not using them.
I know. What are you doing? They're just sitting in a locker in the valley. I don't know. Do you want them? No. It's too much trouble to go down and unlock the door.
Right. So my question was, is like over the last week that I've rediscovered you guys, there's all these things that are being said, like earlier in the show, you're talking about the WhatsApp, like everybody knows what that is. I'm just like, I don't know what that is.
Oh, well, you know why? Because you're an enterprise guy. Right. So there's a lot of consumer technology that you probably don't even have to deal with.
Right. So, but, you know, and I want to start getting back into that because now I'm excited again because my screensavers is back.
You know? Yeah, baby. Yeah.
So my question is, as the Rip Van Winkle of consumer technology, what is something that I need to reantiquate so I can at least communicate with tech people of, you know, day and age?
So you'll notice that there's new versions of Windows, but you've used those, so that's not such a big deal. And there's new, you know, tablets and mobile have really moved in, but I bet you've noticed that as well. In fact, there's a thing in enterprise technology called BYOD. For a long time, corporate IT guys did not want you to bring your own phone. No, you got to use that BlackBerry we provided you. But customers, including the boss, finally said, no, I want to use my iPhone or I want to use my Android phone. And so I'm sure you've had to deal with this, but corporate IT is caught up, and now, you know, BYOD is a reality. People bring their own device. I would say the biggest consumer change that is probably not hitting enterprise is voice technologies. And it's things like, and you may be familiar with the Amazon Echo.
I've heard of it, but I've never, like, the whole smart house thing. I'm just like, oh, I've heard of it, but I've never really.
Yeah, so smart homes are not new. We were talking about it 20 years ago on Tech TV. It hasn't made much progress since then, I would say. It's still the kind of geeky thing, you know, your neighbor does when he gets the lights to come on when he comes home and the TV comes on. And it's too much work for the normal person. But I think the voice assistants really are starting to become a mainstream thing. Amazon's sold, I think, 50 million Echoes. Google's catching up with their Google Assistant. The ability to talk to your house. You don't really think of it as talking to a device because the device is on the mantle or it's in the kitchen or somewhere. But the ability to say, house, turn on that light or set a timer. Or what's the? My wife does this every morning. She'll ask me, what's the weather? And I'll go, Echo, what's the weather? And it tells her, because I don't know, but the Echo does. It knows how hot it's going to be later in the day. Things like that, I think that is maybe the single most important thing. There's another thing you may or may not have run into that I think in the years to come is going to be pretty important, and that's artificial intelligence. In many enterprise areas, business intelligence is a thing. The idea that you have a lot of data in your business, but you don't really know, you know, what makes you money, where your customers are headed, things like that. The ability to analyze big data has become very important. They call it BI, business intelligence. And increasingly, we're seeing systems that do this without being programmed to. They get enough data that they can start to make inferences on their own. And I call that machine learning. And it's the gateway to artificial intelligence. Right now, artificial intelligence is very specific. It isn't what we call general artificial intelligence. What we usually think of when you say AI or artificial intelligence is something like a HAL 9000 computer from 2001. We're a long way from that, the general artificial intelligence. But we've already gotten pretty good at very specific artificial intelligence. For example, farmers use this considerably with drone technology. If you want to know what crops are doing well, what crops aren't, what are getting enough water, what are fertilized enough, if you want that kind of big intelligence about a large farming operation, you can do aerial photography or drone photography and use artificial intelligence to analyze the images. This has become a big business, very important to agribusiness, a huge. And even the mom and pop farmer is starting to use devices like this to understand what's going on. So AI, I think, while maybe too many promises are being made right now for artificial intelligence, but a voice assistant, when you can speak to it, it can seemingly understand what you're saying and respond to it. That's a kind of AI. I think we're getting into that world. It's not HAL 9000 yet, but we're getting closer and closer to that. So the big trends of the last 10 years, Rip Van Winkle, have been mobile, computing moving to the edge. Maybe, in fact, if you wanted to say, the overarching trend is computing power moving from the computer, the laptop, the desktop, to smaller devices all around your home, to mobile devices, always connected to the internet in your pocket. The computing power is really getting spread out, and with it, eventually, artificial intelligence. And I think that's going to change everything. I was talking to a technology writer, legendary technology writer, Kevin Kelly, about AI. He said, you know, at the turn of the last century, when electricity became commonplace, you saw a lot of new businesses, a lot of inventions based on taking old devices and applying electricity to them. He used as an example the old pump outside. You go outside and you'd hand crank that pump and get water. Apply electricity to it. Suddenly you've got flowing water at the flip of a switch. He said the same thing is going to happen with artificial intelligence. We'll take many of the things we already do, add a layer of intelligence to it, and whole new industries, whole new ideas will spring up. And I think that's very exciting. So if you ask me what's the most important, it would be computing at the edge and the AI that follows it. Hey, thanks for the call. I hope you enjoy our programming at twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.